Hey, what's up, everyone? This is the Keyboard Warriors Podcast, Episode 2. Tuning in after Day 3 of Washington Western and Southern Open with Chip and Charles Jabley. They are here again with me. Welcome back, guys.
Thanks for having us. Good to be here again.
Yep, as with yesterday, it's good to be on. Appreciate you having us, man.
Episode 2, we're going to get things rolling on Round 1 matchups that we saw. Few more practices of future matchups that we think will be nice Tuesday, Wednesday, and so on. And we're also going to do a lot the bets that we like for you guys, kind of try to help you guys win some money. And, yeah, so start off today. Charles, who was the first match you saw today?
First match today was it Yoshi?
No, it was Chilich.
It was
Chilich. That was the first match I saw. What a disappointment Chilich was today. He really disappointed me, and it was really simple. It was just a lot of errors. It was not the Chilich that we're used to, but he does this sometimes. He does this sometimes in tournaments where
random matches.
Yeah, and it's funny because we were walking in and Chip kind of said like, sometimes I forget, like I think people forget how good Chilich is, like kind of underappreciate him. But then he gives out these dismal performances like this, and you realize kind of why. He was just spraying errors off his forehand, and he could never develop any rhythm off his serve, which he always lives off of, obviously. And he couldn't do anything off the return games either. I'm looking at the statistics right now. He actually had a few chances. He had 6 break point chances, but he couldn't get a single break all match, and he lost 4 and 6. It was really, really disappointing.
Was he flat, or was he moving poorly?
I didn't see any problem with the way he was moving. He was just missing too much. He was playing aggressive, and it seemed like he was dictating the points, but there weren't very many long points, man. Like there really weren't.
Like I was surprised. Like the thing about Chilich, and I understand that, like, you know, in these non slam tournaments, I get that there's like weird results sometimes, and you'll have top players lose to like random dudes like Radu Albert, who is a very random dude. But, like, I kept waiting, you know, Chilich at some point surely is going to raise his level, right? He's going to raise his level. He's going to get the second set, and then he's going to win the third. And he never raised his level. So, he kept spraying errors, kept missing it in, like, the third, fourth ball of the point. It's just like, bro, what's going on? Get it together.
Chilich won a higher percentage of his first serve points than Albert, but I guess it didn't seem to matter with the way he was playing from the baseline. While they were watching Chilich, I was actually watching the young American 17-year-old Katie McNally play on center court. She started off hot, had a break in the first set, had some momentum going, was striking the ball well from the baseline. But then things took a turn for the worse, and Mertens kind of gained control late in the first set, and then really just dominated the second set. It was maybe a little bit disappointing in first Western and Southern Open for Katie, but I think Cincinnati fans will be seeing her plenty in the future, and her future is bright. Second match we all watched together was the Nishioka match.
Incredible.
That's your guy's boy. What do you guys think?
Incredible tennis. Chip, you want to...
Amazing. Amazing match, seriously. I don't know, I mean, where to begin, because we came over... and it was 3-1 in the first set to Nishioka. He was up a break, and we stayed for the entire match after that. And it was a full three grinder sets. Nishioka took it 7-5, 5-7, 6-4 in the end, but it was just a wild back and forth match. Great long points, long rallies. Nishioka's movement once again was just unreal. And Thompson, you know, Jordan Thompson, I'd never seen Jordan Thompson play before, but I was thoroughly impressed with him as well, even though he lost. In the end, his forehand let him down. The forehand errors started to ramp up a little bit. And I think he started to get tired at the end of the third set. I think we can agree there as well, because he wasn't even pushing Nishioka on his service games like he was earlier in the set. But just all around fantastic tennis. Nishioka is just a relentless, relentless player. Really hard to put the ball away against him. I don't know what, like, I guess the match within the match, Charles, did you have any, like, big takeaways as far as, like, what was happening?
Yeah, I mean, first off, Jordan Thompson hits the shit out of the ball, man. Like, he really does. He crushes the ball, man. And he had Nishioka on his heels a lot. Nishioka was playing a lot of defense in this match. But really, it was a match where I think Jordan Thompson walked off the court saying, I don't know how I just lost that match. Because it was a match where both players at different times were extremely frustrated, especially the first set. Jordan Thompson smashed a racket. Nishioka was screaming every time he lost his first, every time he missed his first serve in the first set.
Honestly, the body language of both these guys was horrendous all match.
It honestly, like, if there was no scoreboard, you would guess that both of them were losing.
That's right.
Like,
that's
seriously, right. it was unbelievable. But a crazy stat about this, actually, and this shows how frustrating the day it was for Thompson, who I don't even think played badly. Thompson didn't play badly, in my opinion. But Nishioka had 6 break points, and he won 5 of them.
I was going to say that exact thing. That is the key. That is why Nishioka won, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And Thompson, on the other hand, was only 4 of 12. I just, like, it's just so funny to watch. Because, like, Nishioka, every time, like, he could not make a first serve. It was insane to watch, honestly. He could not make a first serve. And every time he's just given this incredulous look to his coaching box. Like, why can't I make a serve?
Yeah.
But I don't know. It was kind of similar, really, to the first two Nishioka matches we've seen, where he just grinds the guy. I mean, he just grinds the guy, makes him play, makes him earn everything, and manages to squeeze out the win. But, I mean, I don't have any analysis beyond that other than to say, Nick and Nate, what you and me were talking about earlier, which is that as much as we're all, over the past 3 days, have grown to love Nishioka even more as a player, it's clear to see that he doesn't quite have the pop needed to become an elite player. Right. I mean, he could be a good tour player. He could probably get back to what, maybe top 20? I mean, does he have top 20, top 30 in him? But, like, he won't ever be top 5 or 10 because he doesn't have the pop. He just And that's not his fault. He's only 5'8". You know, you can only have so much pop when you're that height. But
Nate, you interviewed him.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Nate, you interviewed the man afterward. Tell us about that.
I just wanted to talk to him about kind of the first 3 days. He put himself through a lot of physical matches, 2-3 setters, and then even a first-round pretty solid match. Against Sousa, he got bagged in the second set. I just asked him about kind of reserving his energy because in the third match today, he dropped the second set. And not that he kind of served his energy, but if there was a game that was 40-love or 30-15 or whatever, he was not going to fight as hard as he was typically. And I think that's always something we picked up on. So I wanted to ask him about that. And, yeah, he noted that he did do that, and he was thinking about the third set because – regardless if you lose a second set, it's just about winning the match and winning it in two out of three. He was well aware that he had kind of taken some points off and didn't seem that – he said it might not be the best mindset or thing to do, but, you know, he really wanted to get this matchup with Nishikori, and he's here now, and he finally got to it. And so now we got an all-Japanese round of 32 matchup, something that people back in Japan are really excited for. And, Nishioka's been impressive, but as I told Chip when I was sitting next to him, I was like, yeah, he just – the put-away balls are just not there for him. He's
He just has to work too hard. Yeah. It feels like he has to work too hard.
He has to work really hard. I mean, it's just every point he has to get, it's 15 balls, I feel like.
Yeah, it does feel that way.
Yeah, and he's 4 squash shots from backhand to forehand, and finally Thompson would miss or whatever. But, I mean, this has been the guy to watch for us, I feel like, for the first 3 days of tennis. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to seeing this Nishikori matchup. Just talking to him, he was super excited. He called Nishikori his hero. That was pretty cool to hear because he says he's never played with him or against him, but he wants to embrace this challenge and see if he can push a top 10 player around the court and get a big win. He noted that he thinks he can compete with these guys at the top level. He beat David Goffin in the City Open in D.C. this 2 weeks ago, and he noted that in a couple matchups he had with Wawrinka and Nadal and Jack Sock even. Not sure why he noted Jack Sock, but he did. maybe that was 2017 Jack Sock.
Yeah, better Jack Sock.
That was,
when he was decent.
That was skinny Jack Sock.
Skinny Jack Sock.
Before he ate McDonald's for 365 days in a row. Yeah.
But we can't go, Jack Sock, it doesn't seem to be hurting off the court too bad. Still got a pretty blonde girl that I think he's doing okay. But
he's doing all right in that department.
Yeah, but
no doubt.
Still amazed that he's managed to put on 25 pounds and stuff like the last time I've seen him play.
It's unreal. He's got doubles, though. He's got doubles. He got the win in doubles today in straights. So
we'll give him that. Extra pounds.
Yeah. Doubles and 25 extra pounds, baby. That's what Jack Sock's cooking with here in Cincinnati.
That's funny. So, that was kind of the matchup we saw with Thompson and Nishioka. And, Nishioka has kind of been the crowd favorite the first 3 days. He's I asked him about that, and he feels the energy, and there's a good contingent of Asian fans out there, particularly from his home country of Japan, and it's pretty cool to see. I know we saw a bunch of little kids about 5 to 8 years old and looking up to him and cheering him on and speaking Japanese with him, and that was pretty cool to be a part of that environment. Any final thoughts on that matchup?
Not much. I did want to get your thoughts on Jordan Thompson's facial hair. What's the deal with the mustache? What's he doing there?
That is a 1980s stash. It's rough.
It's rough.
I mean, it's horrible. It's nothing against him. Like, he's not an ugly guy, and a mustache is hard to pull off, but why is he trying to do it?
I don't know. I can't even try to defend the man on this
one. It's not defensible.
It looks, yeah. And when he gets mad, he starts breaking his racket. It's hard for me to even take him seriously.
And he chews out 6-year-old ball girl, not 6-year-old, 12-year-old ball girls.
Yeah, 12-year-old ball girl. He was getting mad at for not bringing the towel fast enough.
Not a good look. not a good look.
In his defense, you're not gonna play a player more infuriating to play than Yoshi. So especially for his game, it felt like a matchup that was just a matchup nightmare. Honestly, for Jordan.
Once he realized he was gonna be out there for 3 hours to win that match.
Yeah.
He realized that in the first set, and that's when he cracked that racket, when he was like, damn, if I got to win this, I'm going to take it 3 hours to get it.
Yeah, exactly.
After that matchup, where did you guys head to watch it? I know I kind of split up with you guys. Where did you guys head to the match after that?
In between, we saw Novak play doubles before we went over to see Yoshi.
That's right.
We didn't go straight over to Yoshi after Chilich. We saw Novak and Janko Tipsarevic play Lukasz Kuba and Marcelo Melo, who are one of the best doubles teams in the world
for the
last 2 years.
Yep.
They certainly showed that. It was impressive. We saw the first set. It was a dominant performance.
Yeah.
Janko Tipsarevic is not a very good doubles player. I don't know if he's even a very good player anymore. I mean, he's in his mid-30s now.
Did he hit a forehand clean?
It didn't seem that way to me. No, he couldn't return a serve. He couldn't hit a forehand or any baseline or any ground stroke at all.
And he got broken on a serve the very first game, or their very first serving game. So
after being up 40,
it felt like he was letting down Djokovic. I know Djokovic isn't necessarily a great doubles player, but I didn't feel like he was playing too bad. And he might have left too many balls in the middle on his returns, but he definitely played better than Tipsarevic. But that team is tough as hell, man. Like, that team is tough as nails.
I've seen Novak play doubles probably less than 5 times, maybe 3 times. I've seen him play. I didn't know what to expect from him. I was a little surprised by, in the middle of a rally, 2 or 3 balls into it, he would leave a ball in the middle of the court to be poached off, and he got mad at himself, throw his racket, understandably, because I thought maybe, I don't know, it's tough if you're not a doubles player, it's tough to pick it up and go out there with Janko Tipsarevic and expect a good result over a top 3 or 4 team in the world.
Yeah, just come on, Novak, you're the singles GOAT, but get yourself a better doubles partner. throw us a bone here and maybe pull off an upset win with an actual doubles player as your partner. But yeah, Tipsarevic was not impressive. Not impressive.
But yes. Anyway. So then we went to. Where did we go after Yoshi?
I believe we went to Karina Busta. Unless there was a match in between. I don't think there was. So we went to Karina Busta versus Gail Simone, which was a hell of a match. Probably the highest level tennis that I've seen in this tournament so far.
Pablo's confidence carried over from the JJ Wolf. Is that what
you saw? It did. Pablo's playing unbelievable. We were shocked to see his ranking in the. I guess not. I mean, he's mid-50s.
He was 50 or 51, but it was more of a thing where him having to go through the qualifiers.
Right. He's a player that didn't belong in the qualifiers, like we mentioned last pod. JJ Wolf got absolutely hosed having to play him, but Simone was unbelievable too. This was an incredibly, incredibly high-level match. Karina Busta ended up winning 7-5, 7-6. So he managed to pull it off in straights. But, so, Nate, I liked how you kind of put it. I know you didn't – I don't think you watched too much of this match.
I watched four or five games.
Okay, you were too busy interviewing Andy Murray and Yoshi in the players' lounge, because that's what the big time media. But I thought you said it well when you said their games kind of complement each other. It was they were pushing each other so much in these rallies. It was these long rallies, and like you also said, neither one of these guys has a huge serve.
Nope.
And they both have good returns. So. Simone was doing everything he could, dude. Simone really, really, really impressed me.
Simone was great.
Yeah, I mean, it was a packed house.
They're both counter punchers at heart. I feel like
they are. And it was incredibly long rallies. And I just felt like Karina Busta had a little bit more pop, and he was able to get to the net a little more. And he's really good when he gets – he's better than I thought he was at finishing off points, because everybody knew about
He was carving those balls,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, everybody knows about his ground strokes. But Simone's not an easy guy to come in off of because, like you said, he's a counterpuncher, and he can easily, you know, put balls at your feet, try to pass you. But Karina Busta was there with volleys that were incredible. Incredible stuff.
Pablo's a top 30 talent. Top 35 talent if you want to. He's been there before. So it's not a real big surprise to see him have this type of success. It's just more of an unfortunate thing for JJ Wolf and then Simone to see this guy while he's kind of picking up steam in the US Open Series.
At the same time, though, man, like, it's also what am I trying to say? It's also more of like almost more of a like a plus on JJ Wolf. More of a good look for JJ Wolf that he was able to take a set off Carreño Busta as well.
For sure.
So you got to look at it that way as well.
Yeah. The whole match, Simone's body language was good. Like, he never really gets down on himself. But
weird,
you could just, I mean, you could kind of see in his facial expressions the frustration. Like, he was playing so well pushing for that third set, dude. Like, the second set, he was playing so well, and Karina Busta was just too much. Like I said, he was able to move forward better than Simone was. And that was the difference. But
what you said, man. The pop, the small difference in the little bit of extra power that Carreño Busta had, that was the difference in the match, because when Carreño Busta got a ball that was inside the baseline, he's either hitting a winner or he's getting a weaker ball the next time because he places it so well. Mm-hmm. Simone could not do as much with those. Simone could only put it back to Carreño Busta's backhand, and then you're back into the cross-court backhand rallies, which we saw a million of.
Yeah.
But it was great. It was great tennis. It was long points. It wasn't, you know, nothing but big serves like an Isner. It wasn't anything like that. It was long points and just really, really quality tennis and shot making, I would say.
Yeah, I was bummed. I missed the end of that match. I was trying to see if Murray had anything to show in his first outing since January.
Sad to say, I think that the Simone Carreño Busta match was better tennis than this Gasquet and
for
Murray
sure.
match.
For sure.
Unfortunate to say. But
this is not a surprise, as I've told the Chip and Charles both. Center court is not the place to be. It's basically Saturday to maybe Wednesday. If you want to see other good matches, you just get a grounds pass and you're good to go.
You can go in. That's the thing. You can go in any other court. You can go in the grandstand or court 3 with a grounds pass.
Yep.
The only place you can't go is center court, and you don't really need to go there.
You don't. There's not been a whole lot of high-level matches. Tonight they had Opelka playing.
Korich.
Born of Korich.
Why?
Yuck.
Yeah. Why? Why is that on center?
That's interesting.
It's weird, bro.
They called it in the third set for rain at like midnight, maybe like 12:30. But yeah, that's Opelka. He's somehow took a set off him. That's kind of surprising to me. But I watched Murray, and Murray was definitely rusty. He got broken in his first service game, and he just kind of was rusty throughout the whole match. He said there was wind that kind of threw him off a little bit. And Gasquet kind of got dialed in the second set, and he wasn't able to kind of gain his momentum, and that was kind of, he wasn't able to gain any juice, and that was kind of it for him. And it was funny listening to Gasquet after the match. They said, like, what kind of advice do you have for Andy Murray since you've come back from surgery? And he said, I don't have any words for him. He's a much better player than I am, and that's just like, why would I teach him? That's one majors before. I can't teach him anything, basically, type of thing. And I thought it was kind of interesting.
That's awesome humility.
Yeah,
I love that.
He said it two or three times. He said he's better than me. How can I offer him advice? He's one of the top 4 players in the world when he's healthy, type of thing. And I thought that was interesting. I don't think I expected him to say it. But Gasquet is a humble guy, and I talked to him now twice, and he's I don't know. I'm rooting for him now for sure.
So how did Murray sound? You were in the press room when Murray was giving his presser. How did he sound?
Murray was realistic with himself. I feel like he didn't have crazy high expectations, but he was just good. He was just excited to get out there and compete again. He mentioned that he was nervous when he was walking out there. He had some butterflies. I almost think he kind of put that on himself a little bit. I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen anybody film themselves walking out of the tunnel. Pre-match, I mean, I know I'm sure he's super just soaking this moment up. He's been off his professional career now for 6 months out of commission, and like you said, this is all he's known to do. And since he was a kid, he was pursuing to be the professional tennis player. He said it was extremely tough, and he also announced when I asked that how he will prepare for the U.S. Open, he said I'm not going to play in it. He had to make a decision today on whether he wanted to take a wild card, and He opted not to. He wanted more match play before he went into a major. He did mention he may play Winston-Salem. Sounds like he will. And he also will play doubles. It sounds like he'll stick with Feliciano Lopez, the U.S. Open. And, yeah, I'm excited to see him at least in some capacity. What other matches did you guys tune into today? Were there any practices or anything you took note of today besides kind of these main matches we were watching?
For me, the only really other match that I cared to talk about that I saw today was the last match of the night that we saw, which was Nick Kyrgios versus Lorenzo Sonego in the grandstand court. And, man, Kyrgios is every bit the entertainer we thought he was. I mean, whether you like him or whether you hate him, you never know what he's going to do next. You really don't ever know what he's going to do next, and it's so fun to watch. I mean, man, there was – what was it, like a correction call or something really minor – and he spent the entire changeover barking at the chair umpire for this minor little thing that did not matter at all. He bombed the ball out of the stadium. He
hit a perfect tweener lob.
Hit a perfect tweener lob just for kicks. He didn't need to.
He threw his racket on match point. He went to the guy right behind him and asked for it to serve it. I mean, this and the funny thing is all that happened and this seemed like such a tame match for his standards.
It could have been so much more because he wasn't pushed. Sonego, you know, I can't claim to have known a single thing about Sonego before tonight, but he didn't impress me. He's got a big serve and nothing else.
Let's be real,
he's got nothing else.
I'm gonna be honest. Chip and I were sitting in the stands. Nate's media ass was front row at the damn grandstand that's like packed to the brim, man. There's no seats. And we're looking for Nate. We're looking around the damn stadium, and we see his ass front row. We got so pissed off. We're like, of course he's front row.
I saved him two seats to try to come join me because I was trying to make friends out there, like Steven Glansberg. But
there was a volunteer usher who took his job way too seriously. He thought he was getting a paycheck in the mail, but no, he's just a wannabe mall cop. But
he was working that rope real hard.
He was, dude. Head on a swivel.
Nothing was getting past him, bro.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Love to see it. Good hustle.
Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, Chip and I were saying we were trashing Lorenzo Sonego the whole match. Like we were
starting to get looks too.
Yeah,
like people were getting mad at us.
But I think it was valid, man. Like this guy's 47 in the world, and we said okay. Like we had never seen him. We had never seen him play, or at least I hadn't. And it turns out all he could do was serve, and it literally he didn't move well. And he couldn't sustain a long rally at all, dude. He never got a break point. He never had any looks at all on Kyrgios' serve. It was just extremely disappointing.
There weren't really any good points. There weren't any good rallies. No. Like, there really weren't, not even one that I can think of, other than maybe that one point where the crowd went crazy at the very end after he hit the tweener lob. But that was because of Kyrgios, not because of Sonego.
It was so unnecessary.
Right,
it was
Let's be clear. Kyrgios hit the tweener lob.
Yeah, right.
And Lorenzo Sonego ends up winning that point and starts hyping up the crowd. And we're like, bro, like, no. Kyrgios can hype up the crowd. I know you won the point, bro, but you've given us nothing to cheer about. Like, it just sucked because it seemed like Kyrgios was bored in the second set. Kyrgios was bored as hell.
It just makes you wonder what could have been if Kyrgios was pushed.
Right. Kyrgios was looking for drama in that match to kind of keep himself engaged. Because if he's not engaged mentally, he just checks out. But to get himself a little more engaged, he kind of created a little drama, and that's kind of what keeps him on the path. And yeah. I mean, Kyrgios was whipping out 137 mile an hour second serves. I don't think he was too worried about Sonego. He was trying to entertain
the crowd
in any way he could.
But the thing was, he was getting so mad in the first set. It's like if he had been pushed by Sonego, who knows what he would have done as far as like what else he would have done, like with his racket or whatever.
Right. So lastly, let's give a preview of the tomorrow's matches and kind of touch on the betting lines. We'll try to win you guys some money on the lines that we like the most, and on the, particularly the men's doubles and singles.
We are absolutely going to win you guys some money. I have some ones I really like.
Charles has three of them that he brought up to me. I think two of them could be solid bets for good value. The one I'm questionable on, the Gofan I'm questionable on.
Right, we think Vegas has a trick up their sleeve here. We've been talking about all really tournament how underrated David Gofan is, how underappreciated he is. We today during Yoshi's match, we looked over and it was Azarenka practicing right next to David Gofan, and all the fans were looking at Azarenka, and Goffin was getting no love. And we're like, bro, that's like a top, like that's a top player in the world, and he's not getting any love. And he's not getting any love from Vegas either. He is a minus 130 favorite against Taylor Fritz, who is plus 110. I thought he would be a way, way, way bigger favorite because, I mean, I guess Taylor Fritz is playing good tennis. That would be your reasoning, Nate. You're afraid of this bet, but I don't know. Like, I just think Goffin is so much better, but I know Vegas is Vegas, and, you know, they know what they're doing. But what do you think of this match?
It's tough. Fritz is a big hitter. So he'll be able to push to go final round a little bit. These courts are fast. That'll also play in Fritz's favor. But, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, Goffin just lost to Nishioka. A lot less powerful player than what he's going to be seeing tomorrow. So, I mean, I don't know. I might stay away from that one. I haven't seen Goffin play a really solid match in probably feels like a month or so. Charles or Chip, what do you think about that one?
I think it actually is a matchup that works more in favor for Goffin than with Nishioka, because I think that Goffin can probably defend better against somebody like Taylor Fritz than somebody like Nishioka, who also wants to just play defense and have longer rallies.
Right.
But is
Nishioka a better grinder than Goffin?
He's better. Well, purely, yeah, probably. But yeah. I just think it's a different enough matchup that, like, Goffin could probably figure his way around Fritz.
Sure. I agree. Yeah. I don't think he's going to have to work as hard.
Exactly.
Think
the that's kind of what I'm getting at.
As long. I mean, Nate, that's a good question. Is he a better grinder? Because, like, we know Goffin can grind usually, but I just see it as he won't have to work as hard. I'm not a big Taylor Fritz guy anyway.
We know.
So we already know that. All right. So
What's the next one you got?
The next one, and this one's probably my favorite one I have. But it's Pablo Carreño Busta, who we just talked a bunch about, versus Servbot John Isner. And John Isner is a minus 150 favorite, and Pablo is at plus 130. Absolutely love the value of Pablo at plus 130. All he has to do is start a damn rally. That's it, dude. That's it. Like, the level of play today between Carreño Busta and Simone. And then if you go to the Isner match with how the hell do you say his name, Chip?
Lakovic.
I mean, it's night and day. Like, Isner, everybody knows Isner can't play ground stroke rally tennis. Like, he doesn't do it. He just plays inside the baseline when the point does happen to get started, and he just wails on every ball and hopes to you know go all out and get lucky and get a few winners. But
it is wild to think that a man that can't rally or hit ground strokes has the longest match in the history of tennis.
It is, isn't it?
It's pretty wild. Mm-hmm. How did he get on? How did he stay on court for 11 hours?
Against a player that's a doubles player.
He played against the doubles.
Mahout. So,
he's a doubles player.
Yeah, but I don't know what you guys think of that matchup, but I think Carreño Busta is a good enough returner to get the point started, maybe get a break, or come up big in the tie breaks if he has to. But Carreño Busta's won me over, and I'm clearly biased because I can't stand Isner. But honestly, when I look at it, I'm going to put a lot of money on Carreño Busta, probably too much money, more than I should.
Yeah, I think that's decent value, though, for that bet. Yeah. I don't know if – I mean, we'll see. I mean, he's a pretty good returner. I mean, Wolf was serving 137, and he was able to break him and have his way a little bit with Wolf, and especially at the end of that. So, I mean, should be a fun matchup on paper at least.
Okay.
Drop hit points to 21, Isner versus Carreño Busta. Who wins? How many points does Isner get? Does he get to 5?
I think Isner's hungry for a bagel in that matchup. I think he probably loses 21-0. No, but dead serious. Like, drop hit points.
Like, honestly, I've said this to you before. If tennis were just played drop hit, Isner wouldn't be on tour.
He wouldn't be in the top 1,000.
He wouldn't.
Well, yeah.
Serving is.
I understand. But when it's all you have, it's hard to. I don't respect players that's all they have.
It's hard to respect one dimensional players.
I know.
Kyrgios holds probably 60% of the time without having many ball, like without like one return coming
back.
But
Kyrgios has other games.
Of course he does. But serving is a massive part of the tennis.
It is, but it's annoying that it is.
We don't have to like it, bro.
100%.
I don't. I don't mind Kyrgios' game because he has other game. Even Ivo Karlovic has good volleys. Isner doesn't even have that. He doesn't even have good volleys.
Dude, that's what's always like, gotten me about Isner. Like, bro, just practice serves, overheads, and volleys, dude. And he doesn't even, like, he doesn't even have volleys. Bro, like, you can cover the whole court when you get in the net, dude.
I love what we're sitting here bitching about Isner, who didn't even play today. I love it.
I will bitch
right
about
on brand, baby.
I will bitch about Isner until I'm Warriors. 6 feet deep in God's country. All right, so the third one I had in mind, I actually kind of have four, but the third one is, say it again, Nate.
Basciavelli?
Yes, sir.
Basciavelli.
It was close enough. I was going to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Nicolas Basilashvili.
Basilashvili.
Chip is our pronunciation specialist. We're all Americans, and some of us are rednecks, and we don't know how to pronounce anyone. But that's he is minus 150 value against Andrei Rublev, who Chip and I aren't big fans of. Nate, what do you see from this matchup? I mean, I personally love the way Basilashvili has been playing, and I'm a big fan of him, but I think this is a good matchup for him. I think he'll be able to kind of move Rublev around and dictate the points. I think minus 150 is a good value here. I thought he'd be in the minus 250, minus 300 range. So
yeah, he's a better hitter, better athlete, yeah. Bigger hitter. He's gonna bring the heat on the serve. I like that pick as well. Yeah. I think that's the one I probably should throw some money on.
Yeah. Chip, you on board? Are you making money with me and Nate, or are you sitting on the sidelines?
No, I'm a terrible gambler. I'm not gonna bet on any of these.
Do you see out of this match, Rublev?
I mean, I definitely agree that Basilashvili is being a little bit disrespected by that line, but I'm not gonna offer gambling advice to any listeners because I'm always wrong. So I'm not gonna do it.
Yeah, don't bet with Chip.
Yeah,
don't bet with me.
Gives analysis and then says how he has zero credibility.
Exactly right. It's better if you own it. It's just better that way.
All right. Last one, and this line has actually moved since I last looked, and Medvedev is now even more of a favorite. Wow. Almost enough to where it's not really good value anymore. Yeah. But he's minus 190 against Kyle Edmund. And I know Medvedev has to be worn out. He's been playing a match every day for the last 100 days, it seems like. He's been doing so well in these tournaments, obviously. Been on an absolute tear.
Been the best player on the U.S. Open Series so far.
Right. And Kyle Edmund's no scrub. But I don't know. Last time I looked at this, it was minus 165, and now it's minus 190. That's slightly less value, but I would still feel comfortable putting my money on Medvedev.
He doesn't seem to get tired. Him, team, Davidenko, they're all cut from the same cloth. They think they can play every tournament.
Davidenko, name drop.
I had to drop him. Yeah,
That was a good call.
He played in everything. And now team and Medvedev seem like the next guys that are taking that role.
They might regret
just
that one day.
Stacking up the points, and it leaves you a lot of points to defend coming around the next year. But
that's right.
Well, I mean, yeah, we'll see how it pays off. Medvedev has been playing at a very high level. I'm looking forward to day four. I'm hoping the boys stick around with me for a Tuesday early session before they head back to Chattanooga. I appreciate you guys tuning in to episode 2 of the Keyboard Warriors podcast. Maybe one day we will reveal why we are named the Keyboard Warriors. Pretty good story behind that.
Yeah, we'll get that story in there.
All started with Charles Jabley. That is all you.
That's right.
Always stirring the pot with guys as the guys he idolizes that are Stevie Johnson and John Isner. Charles, Chip. Any final words?
Oh boy, that is I just don't feel that. It's just toxic. Like, it's toxic actually hearing that. Even when you're being sarcastic, it's toxic hearing that I support Isner. But no, we've had an amazing time. And you know what? Just last thing on this bets. If you want to get greedy, just slap a parlay on there. Slap a parlay with the four players that we just said. If you really want to get greedy and just sit back and win some money with the Keyboard Warriors.
Chip, any last words?
No, just no last words for me. Just plug the shirts. The shirts we were wearing today.
Got you. I can do that again. What are we supporting?
We're out here for the brand. We're supporting Cincy Open Insiders.
Yes, I made them do that. I had to. That's for the brand. If you want some more Cincinnati content, hit up Cincy Open Insiders on Instagram. We will be providing highlights, pictures, and more. Look forward to tuning in for another podcast, more tennis talk. Thanks for tuning in.